sugar, spice, and everything nice. These were the ingredients chosen to create
The Grace Curley Show. Radio, TV, print, Grace Curley does it all.
She sings, she dances, she acts.
I'm waiting by the door for my Pulitzer.
She sounds hideous.
She's just the worst.
Yeah, she's a wacko.
She is the devil. I'm in hell.
Now, here's the millennial with the mic.
She still leaves me both breathless and speechless.
I love her. I love her.
She is the best.
Somebody will ask you to say Grace.
Grace Curley.
Grace!
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Grace Curley Show, and a happy Tuesday to all of you. We have a lot to get to today, as always, and I want to start. It's the 11th day of the conflict in Iran. Last night at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware, Vice President J.D. Vance, who is also a U.S. Marine, attended the dignified transfer of the 7th U.S. service member who was killed at an airbase in Saudi Arabia on March 1st. Now, an update for you as far as not just the timeline, but as far as what is being accomplished on our end. CENTCOM is now reporting that over 5,000 targets were struck and 50 Iranian vessels were damaged or destroyed in the first 10 days of this conflict. We're now on day 11. Trump sounding very optimistic about the timeline. And Taylor, there's a little bit of confusion, or I guess there is a conversation happening. Is Trump basically declaring this over? Because he's saying it's almost done, like we're almost done. Is he saying that because he actually thinks the mission's complete? Or is he saying that because he's trying to develop an off-ramp? He's trying to give himself a way to say, all right, this is enough. Gas prices are going to start. They've already started increasing, and I want to be able to say mission accomplished without having to see this through the whole way. I don't know. I don't think that's his style. I don't think 11 days of pressure on gas prices is enough to derail something that he's really wanted to do since 1980, 1979. I don't see it. But that is a little bit of a change in the conversation. We've gone from we're not leaving, unconditional surrender, to, oh, it looks like we've already kind of accomplished what we've set out to do.
I've seen posts saying that this generation would not have survived World War II with the rationing that went on, the war bonds, just the small sacrifices that people had to make that would be seen as monumental sacrifices today. Just couldn't cut it.
Right. What was like World War II? 6 years? And this is, we're 11 days in, and people are like, all right, I've had enough of this. The pain at the pump. And I'm not dismissing the pain at the pump, but you're right. In comparison, you know, I just finished reading this book about World War II, and it's like it will fast forward 2 years. And they're all kind of in the same position, or they're all just waiting for something to change. They, a lot of these countries suffered for 6 years. And when you think about, and I understand people are saying, well, you know, he came in as he was going to create peace. Well, first of all, he's brokered a lot of peace. You just haven't heard about it anywhere, unless he's talking about it, or I'm talking about it, or some members of the conservative media are talking about it. You're probably not getting that from Stephen Colbert. Okay, or the Ayatollah fan club at CNN. You're probably not getting that anywhere. But he's brokered a lot of peace. But you run up against a situation where it's kind of like what my dad always told me. You can't beat crazy. And there are groups, and in this case, the IRGC, the supreme leader, the mullahs, there are groups that you can't negotiate with, especially Donald Trump, who's, if you really look at, he's a pragmatic guy. He's willing to negotiate. He's not holding people up to this like moral litmus test or anything like that. But he wants to be able to negotiate with people who can hold up their end of the bargain. Iran is the opposite of that. And there does come a point where with peace through strength, you got to show the strength. And I don't know if 11 days is really going to do it. Now, I just want to give you some more. And again, Taylor, it's not like 11 days of nothing. It's not 11 days of, well, we're looking, we're waiting for some good news, or we're waiting to see if there's been any progress made. Like, we've been in wars where there's a lot of downtime, and there's a lot of getting, you know, losing hope and feeling like there's no progress being made. This is 11 days of ass kicking. And again, adding in, tragic that we've lost 7 U.S. service members. I'm never going to take that lightly. My heart breaks for their families. I thank them for their service, for making the ultimate sacrifice. But we do have to acknowledge the sheer amount of damage that has been done to the Iranian regime in 11 days, going full force. And so while all that's happening, the price of oil it's looking like it's coming down today. And I think a lot of that has to do with Donald Trump saying he has no problem taking over the Strait of Hormuz. Taylor, every time I say that, you know what I think of when I say Strait of Hormuz?
Horchata?
No, I for some reason, and maybe this is going to make me sound like a booze bag, I catch myself.
I already gave that answer, but go ahead.
I catch myself wanting to say Strait of Vermouth.
Oh, Vermouth? So
doesn't that sound nice for a straight name, the Strait of Vermouth?
Like a horchata vermouth.
It kind of flows, right?
Mm-hmm.
No pun intended. But yeah, Trump said he has no problem taking it over. It controls 20% of the global oil supply. And obviously it deals with oil coming out of several different countries in the Middle East. And Trump is saying, hey, it's open. That's what he's saying right now. He's saying it's open, but he doesn't have a problem taking it over. He actually seems like he might just want to anyway, even if Iran doesn't try to do anything cute, I think is how he put it. So we're keeping an eye on all of this. We're watching it very closely. And every single hour, something changes. I love how often we hear from Secretary of War Pete Hegseth. I love that so many people in this administration have actual experience in the military. And Pete Hegseth keeps saying over and over again, this is not going to be Iraq. This is not going to be Iraq. Let me dispel that. From the jump, that's not what we're doing here. And they've laid out a few really key points that they want to eliminate as far as Iran's military capabilities and nuclear capabilities. And I think the more they do that, the more they kind of sharpen this message, the faster it's going to end. But if it ends, Taylor, I want it to be exactly what Trump said. I do want it to be an unconditional surrender. I don't want to do this. I'd rather do this until September and have it be the end, have it be the change that the Iranian people have wanted. They can take all, you know, they can figure that out for themselves, but have it be so that the Ayatollah and the Ayatollah's son and the Ayatollah's son's cousin, that they're done, that their time has ended. And it's a new era for Iran, rather than it take 15 days, gas prices go back down. But in 6 months, they've rebuilt everything and they're back bossing everybody around and, you know, doing what they do, which we've been seeing for 40 years. I would rather a couple more months and put an end to it. That, to me, makes a lot more sense. And like I said, we'll keep an eye on this. But I did want to actually start. We're going to go to the CNN spin on the two bombers in New York City, the bomb tossers, because it's amazing. It's a new low for CNN. But I actually want to start with something different today. I want to start with this cut of Governor Maura Healey, Taylor, because you had said to me, oh, maybe we should make the poll question about Dunkin' Donuts. Come take my dunks. I'm from Boston. Don't try to take my Dunkin' Donuts. RFK Jr. has said that he wants Dunkin' Donuts to prove whether these sugary drinks are safe for young people. Because you see these teenagers. This is the new thing. Like, when we were younger, Taylor, I remember after sports and stuff, maybe your mom would buy you a Gatorade, like at the vending machine or something. But now I notice that young people, their treat that they get is one of these like refreshers from Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah,
there's always young people.
Energy drinks or something from Dunkin' Donuts. And I remember they used to have coffee culottas, and those were chock full of sugar.
God, my sister loved the coffee culottas. She loved the blueberry culottas.
Oh, gross.
The blue.
No,
the bluer the better.
Traditional was the best. But yeah, crazy amounts of sugar. I'm sure you've seen the video with like the guy stacks up 13 donuts, like, This is the amount of donuts it would take to equal what's in this drink at Dunkin' Donuts.
And not for nothing, but I've told you this before, Taylor. I find one glazed donut, you know that's my go-to. I like one glazed donut. I find that to be so much more satisfying than slurping on the like, I feel like you satisfy your sweet tooth with that one donut, as opposed to that massive jug of sugar that makes you feel sick. Like, isn't a donut, and maybe this is just how my brain works, a donut to me is like you get so much more bang for your buck.
I think people are conflating cold and sweet for refreshing. You can have cold without sweet and it's still refreshing. You don't have to have all the sugar in there. But what are you going for here? Do you have a problem with RFK kind of putting the screws to Duncan?
I never have a problem with questions. I never have a problem with questions. Like, hey, I'm in charge. I'm supposed to be making America healthier. I have a question about these products. They look like they're out of Black Mirror. Every time I pull up, you know I'm a Dunks girl. Every time I pull up to the drive-thru, there's some weird drink that looks like it's from a futuristic movie. It just reminds me of something they'd order in a movie about the future where it's like, hey, can I have the cotton candy swirl bucket? And there's just this weird like neon drink on the menu. So I have no problem asking questions about it. What I find amazing about all of this has nothing to do with Dunks, has nothing to do with RFK Jr., has nothing to do with the sugar. I cannot believe how many times Maura Healey said like in this clip. Unless I saw a different version of it, Taylor, and it was AI.
No, I think this is the same one.
Can I hear the clip?
People are pissed, right? I mean, we love our Dunkin' Donuts. It's like part of the fabric. It's part of our DNA, right? I mean, like, don't mess with our Dunkins, you know? Like, gets us through a lot, including like a boatload of storm and snow that we just had a few weeks ago. There's this like pride, and Dunkin' is a iconic Massachusetts brand. And so there's a pride about that. And like, people are upset that somebody be messing with that. It's just coffee with cream, usually hot. I drink iced coffee, but even in the summer, I like a hot coffee sometimes, but either iced or hot, it's just coffee with cream. And then I'm a big, like, toasted cinnamon raisin bagel with cream cheese. I can eat that any time of day. Breakfast, okay. Lunch, dinner, cinnamon raisin bagel toasted with cream cheese.
That was 8 likes. Am I just being a stickler here, Taylor? Did that not stick out to you?
I'm so used to hearing people say it, so.
But she's the governor of Massachusetts!
But she's trying to be relatable.
But no. I don't think she's purposely putting likes in there. I think that is just the way she talked. I didn't realize she talked like that. I didn't realize that she was a like. I told you about the rule in my house. And I say it occasionally. I slip up, but I told you about the rule when I was growing up. You're at the dinner table. You start dropping like bombs. Gene Curley's going to hit you with an eh. And then you got to start over from the beginning. And then you do another like eh. She couldn't stand it. She could not stand it. And when I heard this clip, I thought, that's the governor of Massachusetts? And this fixation with Dunkin' Donuts and telling people about your order and what kind of coffee you get and all of this just seem relatable with the people in Massachusetts. Ugh.
Your cousin from Boston.
I will say, I'm not going to argue with her on the raisin bagel, though, with cream cheese. I do like that a lot. That one passes the smell test for me.
It's okay.
I mean, yeah, I'm not going to have it for dinner, but not bad. We'll talk about this when we come back. Do you have a problem with this? I really think this is a manufactured, as so many things are with Democrats, a manufactured controversy to give Maura Healey something to relate with the people of Boston on. You know what it's giving me flashbacks to was Mayor Wu at the St. Patrick's Day parade, which is coming up this weekend, where she said, what was it, Taylor? It was, we like to put whiskey in our coffee or something. There's all these tropes or cliches with Massachusetts that make me roll my eyes as someone who's lived here my whole life. We'll come back to this. We'll talk about it. Call in 844-500-4242.
We are a city where the Irish coffee is strong and our opinions are stronger.
No more. No more. We understand. It just, to me, it's the low-hanging fruit. We get it. We're all from Boston. We're all from Massachusetts. We understand what you're getting at. Enough. enough with this. Like, it's just, it's to me, it's so basic. And I've seen it a million times. Colin, if you're upset about RFK Jr., if you think he's coming for your dunks, Oh, you know we'll have to play, Taylor? Shamokin. You got to get me some Shamokin.
I don't know what that is.
I'll send it to you during the break. It's iconic. We'll be right back.
I'm the kind of person that wears shorts throughout the year.
Watch the show live. Rumble.com/TheGraceCurlyShow. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Many people who live in Shamokin are upset that Dunkin' Donuts is closed.
Now I have to rely on myself to go to maybe a Turkey Hill or something where I don't like their donuts. I'd rather the donuts at Dunkin' Donuts. And I'm kind of dealing with it, but I really miss Dunkin' Donuts.
I go there every day. I get a chicken bacon croissant, or I get some coffee, Powerade if I'm dehydrated. I sit there all the time. If I have any like legal work that I need to do, I go there. I meet with my attorneys there.
I'm going to miss that place if it don't open up. Yeah, a lot of my friends go in there, get the cold coffee, well, iced coffee, I guess it's called.
People miss their local hangout and hope Dunkin' Donuts reopens soon here in Shamokin.
Cheap,
okay,
classy,
that's good, God, I love those people. Edna Faust, the cold coffee. I can't tell you how often we quote that YouTube video in my family. My sister always says to me, I'm kind of dealing with it. God bless that woman. She's dealing with it, the Turkey Hill. And that actually brings us to our poll question. Today's poll question is brought to you by Local Silver Mint, located in Ware, New Hampshire. Silver Dave will work with you directly. Contact him at localsilvermint.com. Taylor, what's the poll question? What are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is where do you primarily get your coffee? Dunkin', Starbucks, Honeydew Donuts, gas station coffee, home, or I don't drink coffee? And yes, home does include if you have a Keurig.
Dunkin'.
7% say Dunkin' Donuts.
Really?
7%.
Oh my gosh!
73% say they get their coffee at home.
Oh, what a, aren't you guys so pretty?
Wise audience. I'm very surprised by these results. 16% say they don't drink coffee.
You have very strong opinions about Dunks.
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah, awful. But no, and if you think that you are getting the best at Dunkin' Donuts and you love anything, there's nothing at Dunkin' Donuts that you can't get better somewhere else. And if you like Dunkin' Donuts and that's the only place you'll get coffee or donuts, you're a garbage person.
This is how Taylor started the eulogy for his grandfather. He looked out at the audience and he said, I just want to start today by saying, if any of you like Dunkin' Donuts, you are a trash person. And the audience said, wow, this is going to be different than your average eulogy.
The only instance I'll ever get Dunkin' Donuts is if it's an absolute emergency. I left my coffee at home and that's the only place that's on the way to work. And that's pretty much it. There's
but
no
can we
other
acknowledge instance. Your bias? Can we acknowledge your bias, please? You have a conflict of interest here. And
why?
It runs real deep.
Why?
You're not going to tell the audience? You're not going to come forward? You're worse than CNN, man. You really are.
Is it because
you're grossing me out?
A work history?
Yeah. And I would think that'd be relevant as a journalist that you would tell people that.
Yeah, but I was fired from that job. From Honeydew Donuts.
Still, you probably got a lot of free samples that have pushed your opinion one way or the other.
Those cinnamon sticks, fire.
Exactly.
Baked fresh, in store, every day, unlike Duncan.
Look at him. Look at him. He's advertising. Magic. We'll be right back.
The Grace Curley Show is on the air.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. This is a perfect day to have on Ari Hoffman from the Post-Millennial. I want to talk about Zohran Mamdani. I want to talk about these bomb tossers that he seemed to run cover for, and also hosting Mahmoud Khalil at Gracie Mansion. There's so much to get to on that front. But first, Ari, I want your take on the latest with Iran. The Wall Street Journal is trying to frame this as though Trump is looking for an off-ramp, that he shifted his tone on this conflict and has gone from, I want unconditional surrender, to now telling reporters it looks like it's pretty much complete. What do you make of this tone shift, and what do you make of the conflict so far?
Well, I actually predicted this on my show because Passover is coming. Passover is a huge travel time, big tourist time for Israel. And that's when a lot of people go in and see their families. It's actually, a lot of people think it's Hanukkah, which is the most widely celebrated Jewish holiday. But in reality, it's Passover. A lot of people go on these programs in Israel. I know my son, for example, is supposed to be coming back to the U.S. He's in Israel right now. And a lot of his friends are trying to figure out how they're going to get home. And it would be devastating to Israel's economy to miss that tourist season. So you're going to start hearing a lot of stuff about a ceasefire, a temporary pause, maybe an off-ramp. And then I think it'll ramp back up right after that. I think that's actually what's going on right now. However, you look at what's going on with the war itself. Iran has been so crippled, but they haven't taken out all the launchers yet. This is the problem of allowing a terrorist regime to exist for 50 years and not doing anything about it. In fact, like Barack Obama did, giving them billions of dollars, or Joe Biden unfreezing their assets. It allows them to build up their armory. Imagine how quickly we could have taken care of this in 1980, 1981.
Ari, do we still have you there?
Yeah, still here.
Okay, sorry that I lost you. I want to go back to that for a second, because that's my fear, is that, you know, you keep hearing about, okay, so now the Ayatollah's son is supposedly going to lead, and Trump has said he's not happy about that. But, and this might seem like a stupid question, but that's what I do here. I ask the stupid questions so other people don't have to. I keep hearing the framing of this as, like, he's not happy with the choice. But am I crazy? None of these members of the IRGC or none of these members of the regime are going to pick anyone who Trump's happy with. So it seems to me like he won't be happy until they're all dead, and then he picks someone. Is that what he's aiming for? Or is there a possibility that they actually do pick someone who Trump is semi-okay with leading the country?
Well, look at a place like Venezuela. We have somebody right now who are semi-okay with a person leading the country because we're trying to reestablish oil, we're trying to reestablish trade with them. I don't know about this guy, though. This guy kind of seems to me like he's got a red shirt on already in Star Trek, or like that Gary Larson cartoon where it's two deer talking to each other and one has a bullseye birthmark on them. I mean, it just seems like this guy is just, any second now, Israel or America is going to take this guy out. The problem with a Islamic terrorist regime is that they don't play the short game, they play the long game. And they're probably thinking to themselves, if we can outlast this guy 3 years, what if there's a Democrat president? We can start all over again, and they'll probably help us rebuild our country. That's the concern right now. If a lot of these things don't get wrapped up during the Trump administration, the Democrats are going to come along and undo all of it if they win the election in 2028.
And then talk to me about the other concern here, which is we don't wrap this up. We pull out and try to find an off-ramp. They rebuild. People kind of don't think that anything was truly accomplished. And that's one option. The other option is the price of gas goes up and people are saying this is politically bad for the midterms. Walk me through that. Like, what would you advise if you were one of Trump's advisors right now? What's the best path forward for not just, you know, the globe, because he's looking at these international issues, but also here at home for the midterms for Republicans, because that's important too. If we lose power, I mean, all of this is kind of moot.
I think a big problem is, as James Carville always says, it's the economy, stupid. And while a lot of people are fine taking out the Iranian terrorist regime, a lot of people are not fine with it affecting their wallet. And I'm not sure the case has been effectively made to Americans why they have to sacrifice for the Ayatollah to be gone. Let's not forget you have the mainstream media saying all the time there's no plan, there's no off-ramp. And I know the Trump administration is being as transparent as possible, but I'm not sure what their plan is for Iran long-term. We can bomb them for the rest of time. But if you have problems with the Strait of Hormuz, which is something that might be affecting gas prices, even though we took out their entire Navy, the real issue right now is, where are people getting their gas from? And if you cut out one supplier, you need to supply more. Now, this is an opportunity for American energy. So if Trump has a press summit and he gets together all the oil companies and he says, we're going to drill more, we're going to explore more, we're going to work with partners, we're going to do all this, I actually think that could go a long way to calming all this down. People don't understand why we took out their Navy. Their Navy wasn't just taken out because it's fun. Their Navy was taken out so they couldn't blockade the Strait, and that way we wouldn't have any problems with them. In fact, if you look, ships are moving freely through there. There really isn't a good reason for the gas prices to do what they're doing, except for the fact that now Iran is not supplying it to other parts of the world. And when you lose one supplier, everybody thinks there's a drain on supply. So you have to calm that down by having a massive press conference and saying, look at all these companies that are going to do it. That'll affect the futures. That'll bring the prices down.
Now, I want to shift to New York, Ari. Two ISIS-inspired bomb tossers and the mayor, in a very vague statement, seemed more upset about the protesters than the terrorists. Now, meanwhile, the mayor hosts Mahmoud Khalil, an anti-Semite, the Columbia University student, a very old student. And also, his wife is now in the headlines for liking posts celebrating October 7th. All of this wouldn't be surprising to anyone who knew anything about Zohran Mamdani over the last year of his campaigning. What's your reaction to all of this?
I think the craziest thing is how few people know there was an attempted ISIS terror bombing at Gracie Mansion in New York City over the weekend. I was shocked that people in my radio station had no idea this thing happened because it just wasn't in the news. I'm not sure if you saw this yet today, Grace, because you've been on air, but CNN had a headline that was glorifying them as just wayward youth that was so bad and got ratioed so hard it got pulled from the internet when they said it wasn't up to our editorial standards. Well, somebody ran that article in the first place.
Hold on, Ari. I'm so glad you brought this up. It gives me a really good excuse to read it. I'm going to read it for the audience here. Two Pennsylvania teenagers crossed into New York City Saturday morning for what could have been a normal day enjoying the city during abnormally warm weather. But in less than an hour, their lives would drastically change as the pair would be arrested for throwing homemade bombs during an anti-Muslim protest outside of Mayor Zohran Mamdani's home. Here's what we know so far. And then to Ari's point, it gets completely ratioed because it sounds like they're describing like a play, you know, or something. Just two friends walking along. So they take it down and they write a post regarding the two individuals arrested for throwing homemade bombs outside of New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani's home failed to reflect the gravity of the incident, thereby breaching the editorial standards we require for all our reporting. It has therefore been deleted. They clearly don't require that standard for their reporting because this was posted in the first place.
Well, not just that, but the person who wrote it is a journalism student who, if I'm not mistaken, goes to Columbia or somewhere like that and identifies as they, them. Are we surprised by any of this, that the far-left progressives are covering for the jihadis? This is the stuff we saw for the last 3 years following October 7th. The progressives are sympathetic to the jihadis. And my favorite part, Grace, and I'm sure you played this clip on your show yesterday, was over the weekend when you have this anti-ICE march or this anti-white supremacist march outside of Gracie Mansion. And the bomber comes running behind them as they're chanting and throws a bomb over their head as they're saying, all are welcome in New York. And this guy's screaming, Allahu Akbar.
It's really, really insane to see this happen in New York City, not because you couldn't have seen it coming based off Zohran Mamdani and just his background and what he believes and what he's been very open about believing, but to see it happen so fast is something else. Talk to me a little bit here about Mahmoud Khalil being invited to Gracie Mansion. A lot of people online have pointed out that there's this unbelievable photo of an NYPD officer jumping over the barricades and running towards those two ISIS-inspired bombers. It's one of those photos that's just, it's going to go down in history. It's just iconic. And a lot of people were pointing out, you know, that would have been a good person to invite to Gracie Mansion to celebrate and to show your support for. And instead, he invites Mahmoud Khalil. And people at this point may have forgotten because there's been so many failed heroes that the Democrats have hoisted up. But give us a little refresher on Mr. Khalil.
Oh, sure. So Mahmoud Khalil is the one who ran the anti-Israel violent protest at Columbia University. This is a guy who was one of the organizers behind the occupation of Hamilton Hall, which trapped a black and Hispanic engineering slash custodial staff members inside the building who couldn't get out. These are the guys who targeted Jewish students on campus. He gave out Hamas propaganda. When he was referring to Hamas, he said, "We." And this is a guy who should have been deported for immigration violations, but you had liberal judges who kept bringing him back into the country. This is a guy who lied on his immigration paperwork, and now he's dining at Gracie Mansion as if he's some kind of hero. He is completely the opposite, but he does fit with where radical progressive academics have gone in this country. Because I remember when I lived in New York right around the time of 9/11, I was up at Columbia 2 weeks after 9/11. And there were already people protesting going to war with the Taliban after 9/11 in New York City at Columbia University, the same campus where they protested going to war with Nazi Germany. This is who radical academia has been for decades. So it's no surprise. But with Zoran Mamdani, the amount of people who tried to cover for him and say, oh, he's not that bad. On Friday, he was literally at a mosque with an imam who was talking about waging war against the infidels. And we're surprised something like this happened. Let's not forget his press conference yesterday when Mamdani made it sound like the white supremacists who were outside Gracie Mansion were the ones hurling the bombs, not the ISIS sympathizers who actually did it. I mean, the whole system of priorities among the progressive left is twisted when you have the far left in bed with the jihadis.
And one last question for you. I'm speaking with Ari Hoffman. It has to be about Zoran Mamdani's wife. He was asked about her social media activity. And one thing that I find interesting about this is just last week I was talking on the air about Representative Dan Goldman, also a New Yorker, and how he was in trouble because his wife was liking tweets or, you know, social media posts that were in support of Israel. You know, she had liked something that said that Jews for Palestine is very much like chickens for KFC. I know that's something you said on my show before, Ari. She was liking those kind of posts. And so Dan Goldman was asked about it because that's not okay now in the Democrat Party to be in support of Israel or to be critical of these hypocrites in the Democrat Party. And he had to come out and say, my wife's opinions are her own. They don't reflect my opinions, blah, blah, blah. Zoran Mamdani is asked about his wife liking social media posts celebrating October 7th, and his excuse was basically she's a private person. Not from what I've seen, Ari. I've seen a lot of magazine interviews. I've seen a lot of this so-called private person, including a picture today of her with hosting Mahmoud Khalil in Gracie Mansion. Give me your reaction to this latest update on her social media.
You know, the biggest lie we were told in romance was that opposites attract. I don't know any couple where they are polar opposites of each other. That's just not true at all. Sorry, Paula Abdul. It's not true. What actually happens is that you marry somebody or you date somebody who's got similarities to you. Zoran Mamdani, Zoran Mamdani and was protesting Israel and was anti-Israel and was celebrating jihadis long before he met his wife. He was rapping about the Holy Land Five, who are the ones who were involved in the largest terror financing scheme in U.S. history, the largest terror trial in U.S. history. And that was what he was rapping about. And they were supporting Hamas. Why is anybody surprised that the wife of a jihadi who hates Israel, who has expressed such vitriol for Jews, has a wife who is celebrating the October 7th attacks? I think it's just surprising to me that it took so long for everybody to wake up and realize this had happened, because I seem to remember seeing reports about this in the Jewish world 6 months ago. So now, with everybody finally waking up, are they going to realize it? Anybody who continues making excuses for Mahmoud Khalil or Zoran Mamdani or Zoran Mamdani's wife, it's because they agree with the hate that they are spewing. And that's the direction the Democrat Party is going in.
Well said. Ari Hoffman, thank you for joining the Grace Curley Show. I appreciate it, my friend. Everyone follow Ari on social media at The Hoff Father, and that's where you can figure out where to listen to him, where to read his work at The Postmillennial. And we will take your calls on all of this when we come back, and we'll read that CNN headline one more time because it deserves it. It deserves to be in the Hall of Fame here. We'll be right back.
More of The Grace Curley Show up next. This is The Grace Curley Show.
I know that everything the Democrats do at this point is just a knee-jerk to Trump, but this partial government shutdown is particularly stupid. I mean, all these shutdowns are dumb, but this one kind of takes the cake because they're not withholding any money from ICE. They're not withholding any money from the border. They just want to pretend that that's why they're dying on this hill. Meanwhile, we have all of these threats out there because we're in a conflict with Iran. We have all these sleeper cells and lone wolves and everything else, and they're keeping money from DHS. So all these agencies that are meant to keep us safe are trying to keep people employed who aren't getting paid. It's absolutely absurd. I've been looking at the airports and just kind of asking people who are traveling what it's been like. And some of these people are, the line is out to the parking lot. And I understand the Democrat mindset, which is, oh, people are going to feel this pain and get really mad at Donald Trump. But there's so many big stories out there that I don't even think that's happening. People are being inconvenienced. And the only way that the DHS, the shutdown, is going to become really big news, big enough to take away from the Iranian conflict, is if there's a terrorist attack. And I don't want that to happen. But then the Democrats are going to say, well, it's Donald Trump's fault, this war in Iran, when in reality, as Scott Jennings pointed out, we're at high risk right now, and they're putting the American people in danger in hopes, I think, that either something bad happens and they can blame Donald Trump, or they get a little political leverage with this, which I don't think is really working anyway. Let's play a little Scott Jennings. It's been a while. This is cut two.
But does anyone here believe that we should keep the Department of Homeland Security, that's the name of it, indefinitely shut down to try to force ICE policy changes on an agency that's already funded until 2029, when you acknowledge there are sleeper cells, when we all see radical Islamic terrorists throwing IEDs in New York City, when we saw a radical Muslim terrorist shoot up a bar in Austin, when we had tornadoes in Oklahoma and Michigan this weekend, when we have TSA lines of 5 hours in airports, we have all these things going on.
No, it's not. And I would just add in, that's on top of the millions of people that are still in this country that were let in by the previous president who had an open border for 4 years. There's still a lot of work to be done on that front as well. And like I said, a lot of that is going to be taken care of because ICE and, our Border Patrol is still funded. But everything slows down during this. And so they're just putting everyone in jeopardy. They're making the country less safe. They know that. They know that there are a lot of heightened risks right now, and they don't care. I wanted to mention, because here's some good news, the women's team, the Iranian women's soccer team that is in Australia, will not be sent back. Australia is offering them asylum. They will not go back to Iran, where, of course, they would be in a lot of danger, especially because they have been very, very courageous in sticking it to the Iranian regime, not singing the national anthem, not kind of playing by the rules of the mullahs. And so they were at high risk if they were to have been sent back. But Donald Trump put it out yesterday, and I don't know if he moved the needle. I'm guessing he did. He said, big mistake, huge. Do not send those women back, and we will take them if necessary. Australia seems to have gotten the message.
They said, did you see what happened to Spain when they wouldn't let them use their airfields? We better do what he says.
Yeah, he's not. The honey badger is not messing around. We'll be back. We have a lot more to discuss on the other side. Stay with us.